Welcome to Managed Care Cast, a podcast from the American Journal of Managed Care. My name is Brooke McCormick, assistant editor of the American Journal of Managed Care. On this episode of Managed Care Cast, we're talking with Dr. Ravi Parikh and Dr. Aaron Schwartz, authors of a study published in the April 2024 issue. Their study, Trends in Low-Value Cancer Care During the COVID-19 Pandemic, discusses how rates of low-value cancer services among adults with newly diagnosed cancer persisted throughout the COVID-19 pandemic. First of all, welcome. Can you each introduce yourselves and tell us about the work that you do?
Sure. My name is Ravi Parikh. I am an assistant professor of medicine and health policy and a medical oncologist at the University of Pennsylvania and the Corporal Michael J. Crescent's VA Medical Center. I run a lab called the Human Algorithm Collaboration Lab, which broadly focuses on applications of predictive analytics and real-world data in cancer care delivery.
And my name is Aaron Schwartz. I'm a physician and health economist at the University of Pennsylvania and the VA Medical Center in Philadelphia. I do research that relates to the efficiency of healthcare delivery with a special focus on service use that is thought to not be particularly valuable. And in my clinical work, I'm a primary care physician at the Crescent's VA Medical Center.
To start, what was the objective of your study? Why did you decide to investigate this?
Aaron and I have both had an emerging interest in low-value cancer care. Low-value services are certainly prevalent in a variety of areas of cancer of healthcare delivery in general, and they're beginning to be understood as being quite prevalent in cancer care as well, even prior to the pandemic. Some examples include low-value imaging or low-value utilization of certain types of tumor testing or laboratory testing. But there is this sort of broader question as to what would happen during the COVID pandemic to certain markers of low-value cancer care. And you sort of envision two different scenarios. One scenario might be, given the move away from within-facility healthcare, perhaps there's a reduction in low-value care because people aren't coming into the hospital as much, and so we're really prioritizing care that is really higher value. On the other hand, it's possible that given the tremendous disruptions in practice revenue patterns, there may be some desires for some physicians to pursue lower value services as a way to potentially recoup income that was lost during the pandemic. And both of those questions, I would argue, are quite salient in cancer care, where just the cost of things that we do are generally a bit higher, and some of the discretion around low value care in certain types of regulatory capacities is a little bit lower. So it became an interesting case study to study this broader question.
I'll add that there was a lot of interest in the mid stages of the COVID-19 pandemic in this question of what the pandemic would reveal about efficiency of US healthcare, because as clinicians, we were forced to hugely reimagined how we delivered care on a daily basis. And there was one particular piece discussing this issue by Ali Oakes and Jody Siegel in Health Affairs blog entitled, The COVID-19 Pandemic Can Help Us Understand Low-Value Care. And in that piece, they describe how we should expect to see vast changes in how healthcare is delivered during the pandemic, and hopefully we'll see a reduction in the use of many services that are thought to not be valuable for patients. And they thought that this could be a great setting for us to understand what the effects of those services were, because when they're suddenly taken away, we might be able to see what the impacts of that are more broadly. So I think Ravi and I both were interested in this question broadly about what can we learn about low value care from the COVID-19 pandemic? And this study was hoping to push knowledge forward on that topic.
Going off of that, can you discuss the main findings? Did any of these surprise you?
So our findings were among the most surprising of any study I've worked on, actually. I thought the findings were quite surprising. Ravi, do you agree that this was surprising in your mind too?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, so we're in agreement here. So I think we both shared the view that we would see evidence of these massive disruptions of healthcare in how cancer care was delivered, and that we would see a movement away from services that are thought to be low value. And we didn't find that. We looked at several different measures of low value care before and during the COVID-19 pandemic. And consistently across all four measures we looked at, we didn't see any large reductions. There were some measures that maybe showed some small reductions, some that showed some small increases, but nothing substantial in terms of large, sustained, consistent reductions in low value cancer care across these measures. And that was a big surprise for us.
Yeah, I'll just add too that one point that we did note was just this was noted in one of the figures that was originally in the paper was around just how diagnoses for cancer went down during the pandemic. And so we did see a very real decline. That's not a new finding per se, but it was a substantial and persistent finding. So that, that is an important context for noting that despite the lower number of overall, say, bodies walking in the door of an oncologist or a radiation oncologist or a radiologist or wherever the service is applied to, we still didn't really find a change in these rates of low-value services. So it sort of begs this question, if we're giving doctors and systems arguably potentially lower volumes and more time to be thinking about how they're utilizing care, whether it's high value or low value, and we're still not seeing disruptions in low value care, then what can really be done? And that's sort of where there's some interesting thinking between Aaron and I.
To dig a little deeper, in your opinion, what contributed to the continued high rates of low-value cancer care services despite the dramatic decrease in healthcare utilization during the COVID-19 pandemic?
Yeah, so I'd love to get Aaron's take on this, and potentially even extrapolating beyond cancer. But my mind is, at least in the oncology space, there's a reasonable amount of sort of ingrained practices, whether those be guideline-based practices or just, the art of practicing oncology. And there were several disruptions in the way that we practiced, arguably, we were one of the lowest specialties that was hit by things like telemedicine utilization. And one of the reasons is because when patients have cancer, there's still a huge priority on in-person care compared to certain situations like, in psychiatry or other specialties that took up telemedicine in a more robust fashion. And so if people are sort of coming in the door the same way, even if there's lower amounts, then you might argue that there's still the sort of priority and the perceived urgency of how we treat cancer that doesn't really change the way that we're, say, for example, ordering imaging or certain types of treatments that we're using, et cetera. Now, one argument against that sort of motivated the study was a lot of guidance from professional oncology organizations that we do consider using things like non-cytotoxic chemotherapy because we thought it might, increase risk of suffering complications due to the pandemic, or trying to transition to certain types of therapies that could be given orally or at the home to avoid frequent visits. And yet and still, despite that guidance, we still didn't really see a lot of change in practice patterns. And I think it just suggests that kind of relying on sort of passive physician changes or physician behavior changes for lower value care, even in spite of a pandemic, we still have ways that we practice and ingrained sort of thoughts and without a stronger forcing mechanism that didn't really result in too many changes.
I largely agree with this, and I appreciate the fact that Ravi's done some other research outside this paper that I think fills in some of the gaps on this question of why we're seeing what we're seeing. Just to emphasize one of Ravi's points that he made in separate research, he's shown that the types of care that cancer patients were getting during the pandemic didn't change very much in general, which is a bit of an exception in healthcare, I would think. Yes, there are fewer people getting screened for cancer. People were entering cancer care at a lower rate. But once they were there, it seemed like they were getting pretty consistent types of care, even in these cases where it seemed like there were some options that might make more sense during a pandemic, like oral chemotherapy instead of infusions that require coming into an infusion center. So I think in the context of those general findings, that there wasn't enormous change in the types of services being delivered in cancer care, our finding is less surprising then. And I think it comes back to this issue that behavior change is very challenging. And changing physician behavior is hard, changing patient behavior is hard. And even if you have a massive disruption in the world, it's not necessarily going to make people reevaluate the types of medical decision making that they're doing on a daily basis. So I think that's probably as close as we can get to an explanation here. I think we're pretty confident that the metrics we chose do reflect low value services, things that there should be less of. But in the absence of stronger incentives to change these behaviors or more explicit guidance aimed at the people making these decisions at the time that they're making these decisions, we're not seeing big changes, and maybe we shouldn't expect to.
Shifting topics a little, did your study have any limitations? If so, how do you believe they potentially impacted your findings?
So every study has limitations. Our study, one challenge is that we don't know exactly how the use of these services would have evolved over time if the pandemic hadn't happened. We're essentially tracking how services were used before the pandemic and then during the pandemic, which is not the strongest research design because it doesn't account for the fact that even in the absence of the pandemic, we could have seen changes in how these services are used. So it's hard to say for certain what direction that limitation would have led our findings if we didn't face that limitation and we had a stronger research design, how it would have affected our findings, I'm not sure. But that is one challenge. A challenge we always face in looking at low value care is we only have so many measures that we can look at. And so in this case, we pruned a list that we thought was pretty reliable with claims-based measures and chose several that we thought were important. But we aren't seeing the full picture of cancer care that patients are getting. It would be great if we had some unifying measure of how valuable is a cancer patient's healthcare that they're receiving, but we don't. And so in the absence, we have these proxies that look at particular aspects of care that we think might be valuable or not valuable. So I would love to get a fuller picture of healthcare value for a given patient and see how that's changing over time and how the pandemic affected it, but it's a challenging limitation.
Robbie, yeah, what do you think? I'll just add one minor, additional one, which is, I think if you talk to a lot of, a lot of practicing oncologists, they'll tell you that claims-based measures are just a really bad way to judge whether something I'm doing is right or wrong in oncology. Now, some metrics-focused individuals would challenge some of that, but my personal opinion is that there's so much sort of context to be given to particular treatment decisions that we're making that are related to a patient's labs, a patient's particular biomarker status, and then a variety of other social factors as well. And so, many people, when we presented some of this work, automatically looked at it and said, it's difficult for me to sort of give a lot of trust into some of the, not the metrics themselves, but your ability to accurately capture the context around these metrics. Just given that they sort of have some, there's a lot of factors that influence them. Now, Aaron and I would probably counter with that, claims-based measures are often the best ways that we have to measure value in a general population-based setting, since we don't have robust electronic health record or whatever data, across the board. And also, our study design sort of accounted for that by saying, even accounting for some amount of measurement error, we're looking at general trends over time. And so changes that we see, even if there's some measurement error, should be attributable to the pandemic. And so if we saw something, that we could be somewhat confident there. But, and yet, I think, there's probably some utility towards better investment in sort of claims-based metrics that can be trusted across the board.
I think this is an important point. I often say that when it comes to a quality measure, a quality measure is kind of like a musical instrument. You don't want to do everything with every musical instrument. You wouldn't try to play a piano piece with a drum or vice versa. And so you have to be careful with how you are using a quality measure for a particular purpose. So, for example, in our study, we have a measure that looks at aggressive end-of-life care. And according to our measure, it's incredibly common, approaching 80%. Are we going to say, oh, that suggests that 80% of these patients are getting the wrong end-of-life care? No, I think we could feel pretty confident saying that we don't have enough information to say for a particular patient whether the care that they got at the end of life was appropriate or not. That said, there is probably something to be learned about how these measures change over time, particularly if you have some new intervention or pandemic that you expect to reduce the least valuable of these services. So you still might expect these changes over time to reflect behavior changes that you care about. So I think that's an important caveat, but not one that I think really undermines the core part of our study.
Lastly, based on your findings, what recommendations would you make for future research or interventions aimed at reducing low-value cancer care?
I think that from the care delivery standpoint, as I've presented this work, I've always said, if a massive global pandemic can't cause big changes in the way that we deliver, in the value or in low value care metrics that we deliver, then we need to really think about what, how we're relying on passive education-based strategies versus more active strategies to curb this tide. I mean, low-value cancer care are among the costliest, or perhaps the costliest, care that we deliver, across the healthcare system. Cancer is the fastest growing care sector, or specialty care sector, in healthcare. And so we need to be, being quite thoughtful and aggressive, I would argue, in curbing some of this. And so as we think about that, we need to start engaging health systems and guideline-based bodies and payers who are, have some amount of power in determining which types of care metrics that patients receive. We need to engage all aspects of the healthcare system and really try to be a little bit more directive in working against low-value care, because I think it's generally didn't fall into disagreement about the care metrics that we sought. People generally agreed that these are usually not appropriate, most of the time. And so if we can get that general agreement, then I think that the next step is integrating, measures to prevent against some of this care into care pathways and health system sort of directives and the like. I think that's the only way that we're going to get to move anywhere, and efforts like Choosing Wisely and others are going to put things on the map, but we need to be a little bit more directive.
Yeah, I generally agree with Ravi's assessment here. I think the main message from our paper is probably don't declare victory at this point. The main message is that the COVID pandemic did not reset our approach to delivering cancer care in a way that emphasizes the most valuable treatments and diagnostic tests. So I think that that's the main takeaway. In terms of how to effectively address the remaining low-value care that still seems to be extensive in cancer delivery, I think this is a really challenging question. I mean, there's a lot of abrasion on the part of clinicians who feel that coverage policies, prior authorization are a large burden for them. And these are policies that in some way, the justification is that they're trying to steer clinicians toward higher value decisions. And so I think there's a lot of agreement about sources of frustration and failures in trying to improve healthcare value. And there's not yet a silver bullet. So I agree with Ravi that we need to keep trying things and piloting them and working hard with clinicians to see what works. I think we are very fortunate in the medical field that we are dealing with clinicians who fundamentally want to help their patients and do what's best for them. And that is kind of the guiding ethic of the profession. We are not trying to change the behavior of people who have, I think, fundamental disagreements most of the time with wanting to do things that are not best for patients. And so we have that as an advantage, but we don't, I think, yet know exactly how to harness that toward the best policies. So we've got to study more, think more, try and put more things and see where it leads us.
Yeah, I think maybe one last thing I would say is, irrespective of our strategies for curbing low-value cancer care, which I think, there's a lot of discussion to be had around, aligning on appropriate metrics is really important. Some might argue that there's too many, some might argue that there's too few, but it was really hard, I think, to one, identify correct metrics for this study. I would say that debate around that took a large proportion of the time it actually took to do this study. And furthermore, formalizing that into, formalizing a concept around low value care that might be in something like Choosing Wisely into actual claims-based algorithms that can be deployed across settings was really tricky and required some assumptions on our part that frankly, required a lot of engagement and discussion and could be argued. We need to come up with standardized frameworks that are present in other studies through decades of Medicare formalizing some of this. We need to apply that to cancer care quite urgently.
To learn more about the impact of low-value care, visit ajmc.com or see the show notes. To get in touch with us, you can email info@ajmc.com or follow us on X @ajmc_journal. And if you like the podcast, don't forget to subscribe and rate us.